Hello, everyone. Welcome to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Iffy Wadiway, and today we are joined by film reviews editor at The Wrap, Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good with you?
Oh, Iffy, welcome. So good to see you back. And to have you here as our actual, host.
And it feels good.
Very thrilling for all of us. What's good with me right now is a really depressing but amazing show on HBO called Years and Years. It's created by Russell Davies, the guy who did the original Queer as Folk, and he kind of overhauled Doctor Who. And it is a show about a family in Manchester over the next 5, 10, 15 years as the world goes to shit, which it's doing right now in front of us. But this gives us a little sneak peek of what's happening.
Yeah. Buckle up.
So, you know, in the first episode, his last days in office, Trump drops a nuke on China, you know, and then we get President Pence. But really, Trump and Putin are still pulling all the strings. The economy's collapsing. The banks are falling apart. Birds and bugs are dying. It's awful. And as much as I stopped watching House of Cards because it just felt like too much of what we're living through, there is a perverse interest in seeing how shitty is it going to get and how soon, and that's what this show is giving me.
Ooh.
There's not money in the world that could make me go through that.
Russell Tovey has a lot of gay sex in it.
Ooh, that does up the stakes.
That changes things.
I don't hate that.
Ooh, and that wonderful voice you're hearing as a producer and film festival programmer, Drea Clark. Drea, what's good with you?
The wonderful pervy voice you're hearing. Yeah.
Look, we're all pervy now.
Thanks. It means a lot to me that you are. What's good with me, you guys, is the United States women's national soccer team.
Ooh.
Go sports!
Yes.
It's been very exciting. I think a lot of kids in this country play soccer really young. I certainly did. My brother did. Not to brag. The Clarks had soccer down. But it dissipates. It evens. It's not like a huge ticket here like it is around the rest of the world. So to see our women's team dominate, largely because women still continue to play soccer at a much higher level. People who might have been funneled off to other sports stay with it, and they're incredible athletes, and it's so cool to watch. And they also, as a result, there was an entire Twitter gang up on Piers Morgan.
Oh, yeah.
And just the added benefit of that.
Oh, yeah. You know, anytime you can also make him angry. But yeah, no, just to because I did the math on Nerdificent, because we talk about the pay gap between the women's team and the men's team. The women's team, since the induction of the Women's World Cup, the U.S. women's team has not gotten less than third place.
They're so good.
They've got three under their belt and have not gotten less than third place. We have the best women's soccer team, and they're, for some reason, getting paid less than the team that has gotten zero.
It's ugly, but they are currently fighting to change that, and this helps with that traction, and I hope they get everything they deserve and more, including a win whenever we take this. And I still don't know who they're playing in the finals yet, because that game was happening now, but we're going to win, you guys. We're going to win. Go USA.
Even in Hollywood, the pay gaps start to close up when you get a few chips under your belt.
That's
you
true.
Know?
That's true.
Well, y'all couldn't do that? All right. And lastly, our special guest, freelance writer and managing editor of Nerds of Color, Laura Siracruel, how you doing?
Hi, good.
What's good with you?
There's so much going on, but I just was able to catch up on the shows I've been missing out because I have a kid at home now. I was watching Pose this past season, and it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, it just upped the ante of last season. So that, and it really talks more about the AIDS epidemic in the 1990s. And so I just really captured so much of what's going on. And I'm so obsessed with that right now. I'm waiting for the next episode.
And they pushed aside the boring white characters, which was a brilliant move.
That's what I'm hearing.
Oh my God, yes.
It's happening.
It's all people of color. Yeah. There's one new woman, but it's fine.
They were if you weren't invited to the Met Gala, you don't get a storyline this season.
Oh, that's awesome.
If what's good.
Oh, man.
Stereo.
As you know, for me, being a dork, summer is a huge overload for me. We got all my blockbuster movies coming out, Spider-Man next week, and also Final Fantasy just dropped a new expansion. I didn't even get to play that yet. But Season 2 of Apex Legend is out. Me and my NB Bay Bloodhound, we're out here getting claps. If that means nothing to you, I'm sorry. I play video games.
Alonzo's head just did a full 360.
I was waiting for the pop-up video bubbles to appear to tell me what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, this is. I feel like, yeah, that's been the consistent what's been up with Ivia's video game thing that Alonzo just does not get. But it's okay. That's going to be our Patreon episode or whatever. Me explaining video games. On today's show, we'll be discussing yesterday, and we will answer a call from the Who Shot line, and I'm going to get grilled by Dre and Alonzo, and as always, we've got staff picks. But first, it's time for our new segment called Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, is this important and do I care? First up, I snagged it. I've been talking about it. If you follow me on Twitter, I have not shut up about this yet. Grown-ass actress Halle Bailey, which, of course, when I first saw the headline, I read Halle Berry and was still happy about it, cast as Ariel in Disney's live-action The Little Mermaid. And, of course, because she's a black woman, a strong black woman at that, people mad. And one a racist Twitter user, yep, this is the one I was talking about, tweeted a picture of her Little Mermaid DVD and said, us white girls who grew up with the Little Mermaid deserve a true to color Ariel. Disney, you made a huge mistake by hiring Halle Bailey. This is going in the trash, and I'm calling your manager. this person is blowing up on Twitter because she's like really right. It's crazy. Like, everyone knows the grift now. It's like you are problematic. People are like tweeting at you, and then you ride the wave, and you just keep saying problematic because people are trying to ratio you, but also retweeting you to quote tweet you, and you just ride it to. I guess InfoWars. I don't know.
You too can be the next Tommy Lahren.
Yeah. But truly, that's the plan. Is this important? Do you care?
Yes. I mean, I love that we are having. We're taking interesting choices here,
yeah.
Moving in new directions with these things if we're going to keep making these goddamn live-action remakes
right?
And
yeah.
Animated, you know, classics. And I care because, yeah, this woman is so upset.
Yeah, yeah.
But everybody, she's not racist because, as she later tweeted,
oh my
her
God.
Friend is half black.
No her friend way. Who looks That's, like me, P.S.
Just half.
At that
just
point,
half.
Is just a bit, a half?
Are you kidding me? Half black. I think it's really fun casting on their part. I'd love to know who they brought in. Halle Bailey is part of a singing duo, Chloe and Halle, mm-hmm. and has an interesting background. And as you said, is on Grown-ish. I'm sure they tested a ton of people because these franchises are a big effing deal. But yeah, I like this direction. I definitely enjoy anyone who's going to be like, you know, the unrealistic element of this story of a mermaid who gives away use of her legs or her voice, so she can have legs. What's unrealistic is if you cast a black girl.
Yeah, like, yeah.
So that part of it will never not make me roll my eyes. I'm also with Alonzo, the cash grab of doing these live action ones. But this one, I'm like, oh, are you just going to go full Aquaman for this under the water stuff? Like, I mean, it's going to be so much CG anyway.
I would still rather they had cast Lizzo as Ursula instead
oh, yeah.
of Melissa McCarthy. Win a few, lose a few.
Oh, she would have been a...
Well, now with this casting, everyone has been saying the new take seems like it's this fun sub-story of a white woman just wanting a black woman's voice. And,
shit.
I wrote that too. Yeah. Like, Twitter. Like I felt like, oh, she's a great... It's a great casting. I know a lot of people wanted Zendaya, and I totally was like totally for that too. But now that I see her cast, I'm like, yes, a white woman will steal a black woman's voice because that's the reality of life.
Motown Records.
Feminism.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Let this just be an underwater Dreamgirls reboot.
I don't mind this being like the Brandy Cinderella where there's different like people of color involved too, like
sure.
Prince Eric. I'm like, you can like give me a Latinx or Asian Prince Eric and I'm like,
oh,
I'm
yeah.
good.
Sure.
Ooh. Yeah. All right, we'll keep our eyes out for that. Now, speaking of white women who love to steal voices, Marianne Williamson. Possibly many of you just met her last week during the 2020 Democratic presidential debate. Marianne Williamson, one of the many running for president. Someone in this room might also be running. I don't know. I didn't watch all the debates.
Statistics lean.
She is an author and an activist and went viral with her speech to Donald Trump about how she will defeat him by, quote, harnessing love. The people at UpRocks pointed out one of the things that fuels her love is James Cameron's Avatar. She's tweeted several times over the years praising the film. Some of those include tweets like, in 2010, after the Oscars, all the films were good this year, but Avatar has changed the world. He didn't win an Oscar tonight, but James Cameron deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. And in 2017, if you want a simple explanation, this is again from a presidential candidate in 2017. If you want a simple explanation for what's happening in America, watch Avatar again. Is this important? Do you care?
This woman is going to goof her way into my heart because she's going to say some good things about Fast and Furious and win my vote.
I'm going to go no on both of these, I think. I cannot look at Marianne Williamson and not think of the Sigourney Weaver character in Jeffrey, who is a total parody of her. And like it is as potent as ever because I will never forget that in the 90s, Marianne Williamson's whole deal was like, if you have AIDS, it's mm-hmm. your fault. You don't love yourself enough.
Yes.
And you brought this upon yourself by these crystals. So not having it from you, Marianne.
I didn't know
100%.
That.
That's why I do think it is important. I think when we put these things like of her clowning, it's not. She, to me, is like the most dangerous kind of wealthy white woman. Her thing, like, read anything she's ever said about vaccinations.
She's the original Goop.
Yeah, and except for if Goop was convinced that you could cure anything by self-love, and if you're not cured, it's because you aren't loving yourself enough. So yeah, so I have a problem with her
being... I guess
she
won't goof her way into my heart, and surprise, surprise, the black dude fell for the attractive white woman without looking at all the facts.
But really, did she change your mind on Avatar? That's the important part.
You know, made me realize he does deserve a Nobel Peace Prize for Avatar.
You're going to write him in.
I'm going to write him in. Yeah. That hair and hair sex scene like, moment, that's
maybe
that's
after
where...
the sequels. Maybe that'll really kind of put him over the top, you know. For those of you who are not following Paul Schrader's Facebook page, it is a wild place. As reported by The Playlist, he was recently posting about Jordan Peele's movie Us. A Facebook user then posted that he felt Us was an homage to the work of Brian De Palma. Oh, no. Get ready for some old white man clapback. Schrader writes, don't get me started on Brian DP. I rewatched Redacted last night because I thought that given total artistic freedom, he could reach for the stars. And he did. But the stars were beyond his reach. The script is trite. It is weak. That's because Brian is trite. Brian is artistically weak. Skate fast on thin ice. That's his story. That's his con. Schrader is most famous for writing Taxi Driver and Raging Bull, but did in fact work with De Palma on the movie Obsession. Apparently, De Palma heavily rewrote the film, and Schrader wound up denouncing it. Is this important? Do you care?
So 100%, there's no way that Brian De Palma does not owe Paul Schrader for a bag of Coke. That is my number one takeaway. Schrader's been nursing that injustice for decades.
Oh, Matt Zollersites had a great tweet about how, like, look, both of these guys, like, are very hit and miss as filmmakers, but De Palma succeeds more often and shit talks fewer people than Paul Schrader does.
Yeah, no, I love old artist white dude beef. Like, it's just the perfect, pure, just very wordy and angry.
It's so wordy.
Like, yeah. I was like, old man screams at cloud.
Yeah. This is a Simpsons gif. Although I wish there was a world where Brian De Palma could just reply with the Mariah Carey, I don't know her. Like, if that happened... R.I.P. me, you guys.
Yeah, see, this is when I wish, like, Charlemagne invited these guys on the Breakfast Club. It's like... Like, who, him? I don't know, Schrader.
Maybe when Wendy Williams comes back in the fall, she can, like, hash it all out.
Oh, man, yeah, those are my dream guests. Oh, all right. Well, we're going to take a break, but when we get back, we'll be talking about yesterday just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
I listen to Reading Glasses because Bria and Mallory have great tips.
My suggestion for book festivals is just go for one day.
I listen for the author interviews.
I was a huge Goosebumps fan.
Oh, yes.
R.L. Stine was totally my jam.
I don't even read. I just like their chemistry together.
Literally, if on the back it said, like, this book made me shit my pants, I'd be like, that's, I'm buying this book. Yeah. Like, I think the problem with blurbs a lot of times...
I like that we both want to crap ourselves over books.
I'm Bria Grant.
And I'm Mallory O'Mara. We're Reading Glasses, and we solve all your bookish problems. Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe, and in the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Laura Siracole.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today we're talking about Yesterday. Alonzo, could you provide a brief synopsis of the film?
Oh, sure. Okay, so Himesh Patel plays a not very good and not very successful singer-songwriter. He gets hit by a bus at the exact moment when all the power goes out all around the Earth at the same time. When it comes back, he has been horribly injured in the bus accident, but is also the only person on Earth, it seems, who remembers the Beatles and their musical output. Can he become the world's greatest singer-songwriter by completely channeling songs that he 98% can perform from memory?
Good job, Alonzo. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, well, one thing I'll kick it off with is this is another rom-com we get to talk about. So, and I know y'all are big fans. I didn't realize how much a sucker I am for, as a creative, rom-coms that feature the woman who always believed in you, and you're like, oh yeah, you are so important to me. You were there for me. You were one of my day ones before, you know, when I was recording, when we had the cup holders in the studio booth, you know, before I was Drake, back when I was Aubrey, you know. Like,
You just gave a more heartfelt and thoughtful response to your person that had you the whole time than this dude
Anyone
did.
Anyone in this film does.
So it's interesting you say that, because in the description and in a lot of the marketing for it, the hook, right, is this is the film about this guy who remembers the Beatles catalog when no one else does. And then you're watching it and you're like, oh, you've decided to make a rom-com that has this gigantic conceit on top of it, and the rom-com part, the romance is the weakest part, and the most, I mean, there's problems in many threads, but to me, I would be fine, and Alonzo's mentioned this before too, I would be fine with a lot of the weird, I mean, anything that has time travel or this sort of kind of fantasy element, there's going to be paradoxes or holes or whatever. I'm normally fine overlooking those if I'm along for the ride, but this ride wanted me to be falling in love with these two people and really hoping for them, and I think that's where it came up shortest.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the high concept of the Beatles thing is what is meant to draw you into the theater. And then it's like, oh, no, this is really about these two characters. And these two characters are super dull. I did not care about Himesh Patel as Jack. I did not care about Lily James as Ellie. I didn't buy their sort of mutual pining that went unrequited, or him not realizing that she was the one and the man, you know, like it is that thing where she is trying so hard to be Keira Knightley the whole time. I found that really distracting. And then they also give her like the unflattering hairdo, so you don't notice that she's like
Lily James. Yeah.
So a lot
of curly haired women are not happy with you right now.
Curly hair is great and it looks great in a lot of people. She is given a distinctly unflattering, like there's like knots
or something going on. It's like one step up from Cameron Diaz's hair in John Malkovich and being John Malkovich.
Kind of, yeah. It's
the frizz pile.
It's like, remember the Scary Spice, those sort of knots in the front?
The buns.
Like, if she'd slept on those for a couple of days, that's what Lily James's hair looks like.
Well, they tried to make her frumpy with all the pajamas. Oh, like, they're like, oh, you're wearing those pajamas. I'm like, she's still hot.
Yeah, no, there was never a point in that movie when I was not attracted
right?
to her. Like, I was like, yeah, no. I was going to say, that does make a good point, because I think that's kind of why I was a little more on for the ride, because just the concept was very fun to me, that I was just riding along. And now that you pointed out, it is kind of like a weak love story, because we just kind of visit it and then we'll disappear into this concept, then we come back and visit it and it somehow progressed, but we don't see the progression of it.
But you were saying though about how, like, if the if the distraction is distracting enough, then you'll forgive the other stuff.
Yeah.
But like, if I'm not interested in their love story, which I wasn't, then I'm like, why aren't you giving me more about what this Beatles-free world would look like?
Right. Yeah.
Because like, if you're going to pick somebody who had this massive cultural footprint and whose songs are universally beloved, then it is then your responsibility to have to figure out, wow, what would that world look like? It's sort of like in the Watchmen comic book. What would a world where superheroes exist look like? Well, let's see. This and this and this and this. And in this movie, it's like, you know, we had more interesting conversations afterwards about like, so was there a Badfinger?
Right.
Did Manson people kill anybody if they didn't have Helter
did
Skelter?
Did the monkeys come along?
Yeah, did the monkeys come along? Was, you know, if there was no handmade films, then does that mean like there was no like Monty Python features? I mean, like all these different things that the movie could give two shits about and doesn't explore in the slightest. And so you're just left with this mild flirtation with a gigantic idea and these two dipshits who you don't care if they fall in love or not.
I know, I do agree with that, because when I entered the film, I was thinking, this is going to be a Beatles thing. This is going to be how... And then it kind of tricked me into thinking, like, oh, it's a love story. Okay. And, like, you know, I kind of was kind of more forgiving, because I was like, oh, you know, like, I like the music and everything. Music's really good. I could forgive the love story. They did have a lack of chemistry together. They didn't really. Like, Lily James, I could believe her falling in love with anyone because she's really good. But I just felt like they didn't have enough chemistry with each other. Mm-hmm. But I kind of was like, okay, I'm just going to ignore that. I'm going to ignore that. It's a Richard Curtis. He created, like, British love stories. So I'm just going to ignore that part.
Yes, none before him.
Yeah. And, but
sorry, Shakespeare.
But I did, the parts that did have the Beatles thing, I did enjoy that. Because, like, I'm a huge fan of Ed Sheeran, so I'm a cheerio.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of was like, I'm allowed one problematic thing. But, and so I enjoyed those parts where he was there. And they did mention Oasis no longer being made.
That's
because they
funny
were inspired
joke.
By
that was a good joke.
Beatles.
Yeah.
I think I agree with you. The best parts of it, I don't think that Hamish Patel had a good performance. I do think he was a lovely singer. And my favorite parts were every single Beatles song. I was like, oh, I really love this song.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah, they got a lot of good. Oh, and this one, too.
But didn't you love hearing the actual Beatles over the closing credits?
I did, but I'm also someone who... I like a good cover. Like, if someone has a lovely voice. And I again, in terms of my friend that I saw this with, we were like, oh, this pitch is the quintessential freshman year pitch, right? Like, what if you made a movie about, like, a world where the Beatles don't exist, but one person, like, it's this fundamental, and then you're like, great. And then it's just nothing but, like, problem questions, and then they can't answer them, and you're like, it's never going to be made because I can't get the rights.
But what's it about?
You know? Right. And for this, it was surprised that it had these big, heavy hitters behind it, because I still felt a lot of those freshman year problems. But when he sang, it was lovely. And the other thing, he's a tricky casting, because I do think there was something to explore with the idea that, to me, Hamish Patel is the same level of empirical attractiveness and, well, musicality, not songwriting, or performance musicality, as Paul McCartney. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I looked at young Paul McCartney, I'm like, oh, I need to know he's Paul McCartney before I'm like crying at Wembley or whatever. Yeah. And I thought Hamish was a good, or Hamish.
I keep wanting to call him Hamish too. Himesh.
I'm like, he's not Scottish. Himesh. I thought he was a good stand-in for that, but I thought that his weakness on the other side of it, if he had been able to convey even some like poorly written, it's some subtext of the pull, like I felt a lot of his ideas of being a fraud or of being, they're very heavy-handed, like dour moments, right? Instead of conflict, like in the hands of a different actor, there could have been more there for me to grab onto.
Yeah. I know. I mean, we could talk about that fraud thing, because that was kind of the one biggest bump that for me was, you know, at the end when he's like, I'm going to reveal that, you know, that I've been stealing this, but you live in a world where they don't exist.
Exactly.
There's no reason
to do that. I didn't understand the principal quandary. Is like, am I a big phony? It's like, well, I mean, yeah, but at the same time,
you're
like,
not.
Who's going to know?
And then they kind of like bucked against the simple fact that the two other people that knew were like, no, you should do this.
Yes, we want to hear the song.
Yeah, which was a lovely reveal.
That was so fun.
And the other thing, he couldn't.
But it also takes any stakes the movie had right out.
Yeah. And there was an out for him to be like, isn't aren't all artists answering the call of the muse?
Yeah.
Who isn't to say the muse that you have, what if that was how, what if there were never any Beatles? What if you dreamt that up in a fever dream, and when you woke up with your gross, toothless mouth, and this all flooded into you, like, what if that was your muse? I mean...
Or why couldn't he just sort of split the difference and be like, okay, fine, here's the deal. Yeah. These songwriters existed, I remember them, and y'all don't, but I'm going to continue recording these songs because you like them so much and they're so awesome.
And people would have just, you like, know, Andy Warhol style, like, oh, okay, is that great from your band, The Beatles?
Ooh, yeah, exactly. And I love the big thing at the end at the concert where he goes, and I'm now releasing them all on the internet. I'm like, dude, your songs got released on the internet the second your CD came out. Yeah. I hate to break it to you.
I always wondered, because he said who the Beatles were, it's an alternate universe, so the Beatles are alive, like those people.
Yeah.
I wonder if they were like, what the heck? Like, we didn't write those.
Yeah.
Yes, we know they are. And I very much, again, on the freshman year threads, it would have been my first question of, oh, great, you Googled Beatles. Did you track down those dudes?
Yeah.
Like, is Paul McCartney still around? Was
we
he
get,
dead?
We
like,
get one of them.
We get one of them in a dumb thing, but in a thing.
It
was an effect.
In a dumb thing that is, you can tell, designed to make you cry. And I was like, no, I see where this is going, and I can tell your intent, Richard Curtis and Danny Boyle.
Yeah, yeah. This is going to be a huge spoiler, so if you're interested in that, I'd go ahead and skip ahead or pause if you're waiting in line for the movie before. Like, I'd like to imagine you are like, let me get this last.
Come on back after.
Yeah. But the big reveal is a moment where the other two people that know, they're like, we did the work and we found this person. And he unravels and drives to this undescripted place,
seaside.
Archipelago at the end of the world, you know.
And he finds, and the door opens, and it's John Lennon, because he's alive, because he wasn't
the same
killed.
Hair and glasses.
Yeah, yeah, same hair and glasses.
But like in his, what, 70s?
70s, 70s yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, it's this huge reveal, and like, my theater did gasp. And I was like, dang, they got John Lennon to be in this. It took me 2 seconds to be like, oh, nah. No, that's impossible.
It took you 2 seconds to wonder if he was SAG or not.
Now, what has he been up to?
This movie means more checks for, like, you know, Paul, Ringo, Yoko,
Apple
and
Music,
the George Harrison estate. But like, who is buying this soundtrack and listening to Himesh Patel do these Beatles songs?
Well, obviously, I already bought it. I'm just kidding.
It's like I've seen people online talk about how they're listening to Taron Egerton sing the Rocketman songs. I'm like, why? On what planet when we have Elton John?
All right. Do we want to give our final reviews, which, if you're listening to the first time, I don't know why, go back and listen to all of them, even the ones without
They
me.
Were waiting for you to get hired.
Yeah, well, too bad. Go back, listen to them all. But our final reviews is, would you screen it, stream it, or skip it? So going down the list.
I'll go, and I know my answer because I was forced to come up with it early when my father texted me this week, have you heard of the movie Yesterday and should I see it? And I said, you will not like it because it's a rom-com, but you will like it if it's because of the music. So wait till it's on Netflix. So as much as a lot of me says skip it, I'm actually going to say stream it for the music.
Because like I like supporting my own people too, like, mm-hmm. Himesh, but I wasn't obsessed with it or liked it so much where I'm like, oh, let's go to the theater and watch it. I mean, before I knew I watched it, I would have been, but I would say stream it because the music is still good. And if you want to have your younger generation watch it, just because it kind of introduces the Beatles.
Yeah.
Laura's trying to be all chill, but she is wearing her Yesterday shirt.
Yes.
You're missing that on the podcast.
I love it.
I would say stream actual Beatles albums and skip the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the whole idea of like introducing new generations of the Beatles, I kind of feel like Beatles, it's in the air, you know, like it's inescapable somehow. And I don't know. I think younger people will find the Beatles just fine without this film.
Oh, we're stomping out the Beatles, me and the millennials. The Beatles will be toast. It's all going to be Young Thug from here on out. So you better go
toast,
watch
you mean.
With me, one thing you'll learn about me is I'm very indecisive, and I will create midpoints because I actually had a real good time, but I also saw it at the Los Feliz 3, which if you're unfamiliar with LA, they're these classic theaters that really put me, because I grew up out here, so it really puts me in like a iffy place, and it felt like my parents dragged me to a movie that I probably wouldn't have seen on my own, but then found things I really loved in it. I will say my one gripe with the movie is that they did not do the full version of one of my favorite Beatles song, which is Eleanor Rigby.
I was just going to say Eleanor
that
Rigby.
Is my favorite Beatles song, but, and they kept teasing.
But that was my favorite running gag, that he couldn't remember the goddamn lyrics.
It was a good, and that the other two people who remember dogged him on the Mean Mr. Mustard.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, dude.
Oh, that so much fun. So I will say, screen it if you have a like cheaper, screen it at the Dollar Theater. Or, Regal has the $7 Tuesdays.
Get that air conditioning.
Yeah. Get that AC. It's very hot out. But definitely stream it. I feel like this is a fun thing you can probably flick on. I am on Team Dre on this. The songs are fun to listen. Also, that also makes it the other logic bump where it's like you are performing the song. So the only real crime is that you didn't actually write it as far as it goes. Anyway, we can go on forever. I'm a nerd. That's what I argue about the most. But yes, official screen it at the Dollar Theater. All right, so we'll be right back after you hear from another show from Maximum Fun. Sit tight.
Unless you wish you could trade in your own family for the Pearsons, Inside Pop is definitely not for you.
Sean, that's a little extreme and also not quite true.
Okay, Amita, how about Inside Pop is the podcast for people who love and appreciate the best pop culture has to offer?
Oh, much better.
In every episode, we interview the people who create the culture you crave.
Past interviews include the production designer for Fargo and Tony DeCray from the DreamWorks Story Department.
You'll also get the very best pop culture recommendations in our Big Sell segment.
Plus, the opinions of two TV producers who are pop culture obsessives and actually do wish Sterling K. Brown was our cousin.
Kissing cousins, that is.
Listen to Inside Pop every other Wednesday on the Maximum Fun Podcast Network.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway, and in the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duralde.
Laura Sarah Cole.
Drea Clark.
Now it's time to answer a call from the Who Shot line. Casey, play the call.
Hi, guys. My name is Elima, and I am the mother of an 11-year-old gay daughter whose favorite movie is Love, Simon, and who keeps asking me for other movies featuring gay or queer characters, but can't find a whole lot that are age-appropriate. A lot of the movies out there deal with sexuality or other mature themes and are just not right for her yet. So my question for the Who Shot line is, can you recommend other gay and queer and trans-friendly films that might be appropriate for a wider variety of ages? Thanks.
Ooh, good question.
That's a good question. 11, you're a good mom.
You are. 11's tricky, but...
Yeah, because so many films, regardless of content, like to throw in some booty action in there.
Look, I'll tell you, I relate to your pain, though. I remember in the early 90s trying to have, like, gay movie night and just finding, like, at least two movies that weren't depressing. So, you know.
Oh, that's a good point. At least there's more positive ones now.
Absolutely, yeah. But I think aiming for younger audiences is still a great frontier in LGBT cinema. But I think we're going to come up with some titles for you. I would start off with... It's a movie called Geography Club. It's based on the book by Brent Hardinger. And basically, it is about these high school kids who want to start a sort of stealth GSA, Gay Straight Alliance. But they don't want any outsiders to join it. So they give themselves the worst name possible for a club, thinking they can keep it to themselves. So it's Geography Club. And then, of course, someone joins and what's his deal? And things happen.
Things happen, but not... super pervy things,
no.
So your daughter can see. again, in line with the younger viewer, I would definitely say Saved. I would actually recommend Saved for all audiences.
Oh, it's great.
Because I love that movie.
I am filled with Christ love.
I'm filled with Christ love. It was executive produced by Michael Stipe, which is my favorite weird fun fact about it. But
Brian Dennehy.
Yeah, it's Jenna Malone and Mandy Moore and...
oh, yeah, yeah, I remember
and
this
Jenna
movie.
Malone
yeah.
plays...
Macaulay Culkin.
Macaulay Culkin is
yes,
so good in
and
it.
And he's in the wheelchair,
yep.
right?
Yes.
Yes, I totally yeah. remember this movie. This is a great
it's
movie.
It's so
yes.
good. And it's set in a very religious school and community. And Jenna Malone plays a character who is coming out, but also very much loves Jesus and wants to be part of it. And,
No. Jenna Malone gets pregnant.
Yeah, because she has sex with a boy because she wants to make herself straight.
No, the boyfriend is the gay one.
Thank you. Oh, you're right. I twisted it.
Yes.
So he gets shipped away. It's a whole thing. Anyway. But their whole view on it and how they're dealing with it, it's got a lot of like high school sparkiness and it all, the big, you know, climax all takes place at the prom.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Anyway, I do think it's a good young one.
There's a film, it's technically about an older gay couple, but they adopt a six-year-old who is very clearly marching to the beat of his own drum. It's a movie called Breakfast with Scott. It stars Tom Cavanaugh and Ben Shankman, and one of them is, I think Cavanaugh's character is like a hockey player who has come out and is, you know, in a relationship with a guy, but now they have adopted, or they're in the process of adopting this boy who is just like, neither of them quite know how to deal with him because he's so like unrelentingly fabulous at the age of six, and you know what that sort of brings up with their own kind of, you know, internalized homophobia and their own life struggles. It's a really charming film. I'm just gonna sort of just
pepper
about, and you know, you might want to watch these first and decide for yourself,
yeah.
11 year old appropriate or not, or appropriate for your 11 year old. But Show Me Love, a wonderful film from Lucas Moodysson. Beautiful Thing, a gorgeous gay teen romance from the UK. The Incredibly True Adventures of Two Girls in Love.
Which is one of my favorite films in high school.
Oh, nice.
Or college, somewhere.
Patrick Ian Polk's Blackbird. The Belgian film Ma Vie en Rose. The Netflix movie Alex Strangelove, which
yes.
is along the Love, Simon lines, I think. A film called The Wise Kids that I like a lot that we screened at Outfest a few years back. The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Edge of 17, not to be confused with The Edge of 17.
Right.
This is a different one. And Get Real.
I like to add Hearts Out Loud.
That's on mine.
Sure,
Hearts Beat Loud. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That one's really good because it's a father-daughter dynamic, but she also comes out.
Yes.
Out.
It has a great little love story in
it. And the music is great in that one, too.
The music is great. Speaking of good musical films, or films with good music.
Dre, do you have your list?
Yeah, I do. Naomi and Eli's No Kiss List, which played at Outfest.
Yes, it did.
Is about a... The girl, I keep picking ones where the girl is straight and the guy is gay, which is really the story of my life. So, and it's her reconciling with being cool with his sexuality, but then also when he starts dating, wrapping her head around
that. Don't they both fall for the same guy?
They fall for the same guy. It's from the same novelist who wrote Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist,
yes.
So it has a
yes.
very similar vibe to it. Debs, which.
Oh, love it.
Is so good and really fun. It's about.
Teen lesbian spies.
Teen lesbian spies. It's if you looked at the cover and didn't understand that it was like actually intending to be about those things, you would assume it's maybe a softcore, like just fetish piece. But no, it's girls who are like taking care of business.
It's the movie that got Angela Robinson the gig to direct Herbie Fully Loaded.
Ooh.
Yes. And then I would say the movie Pride. I know that sounds
like
a strange one. You agree?
So good.
Yeah. Do you want to say about that one?
Yeah, it's based in the UK. Was it Ireland or is it the UK? Was
the
it?
UK.
Both.
It's
yeah.
during the miners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just talking about like the strike regarding like LGBTQ. They're fighting for the rights.
For the miners.
Yeah. It's just great. I just love, there's all the characters are just interesting because they're all LGBTQ and it's just mixing with the elderly population. I just remember one scene where the lady was like, my lesbians, where are my lesbians?
Yes. It very much has that accessible British, like full Monty comedy
yes.
that happens to also have this great and historical LGBTQ activism.
Yeah, this notion of kind of like, you know, shared radicalism. It's a movie about intersectionality.
Yeah.
It's basically you've got these queer activists being like, we're going to support the miners who are striking, you know, because labor and because we're all in the same struggle here against, you know, the boot of the patriarchy. And yeah, and Ben Schnetzer is so great.
And Andrew Scott's in it, but he's not playing the hot priest.
But still, Andrew Scott. It's very fun and charming.
Oh, well, I noticed the hit movie Stonewall was not in any of your lists.
Would you say 11 years old for Booksmart? I know there's one sexual scene.
Oh.
There's one sexual scene, but overall, it's like a coming of age. Maybe when she's 15, she could watch
Booksmart. Or 13. But listen, my goddaughter came out when she was 13 and then proceeded. I was like, oh, great. That's wonderful. How do I embrace this? And then was like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, oh, what are you watching? What media should I put together this list? And she's like, basically, all I watch is Orange is the New Black. And I was like, oh, okay. Oh, my gosh.
You're covered.
That's a lot. Okay. So, yeah. Up
and
to
there,
the mom.
There is also that animated show on Hulu, The Bravest Knight, which might be too young for your 11-year-old, but has like a very adventuresome young girl character and I think two gay princes or kings or something. So.
And have her watch all of Glee. I found Glee charming.
And we'll include that list of all the movies on the website, so make sure you check that out. And thank you for calling in, and please keep calling in with questions. The number for the Who Shout line is WSY-803-1664.
All right, since Iffy has officially joined the show, it's a full-time host, we thought it would be good for everyone, listeners, Alonzo and I, producer Casey, to get to know him a little better. So in order to do that, Alonzo and I are going to pepper him with questions. Da-da! Iffy, get ready to get grilled. You'll have 60 seconds to rapid-fire answer our movie questions. I might sneak in a personal one. I'm just kidding. That's it. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Alonzo, you want to start us off?
Sure.
Hit it.
What's your favorite movie not in English?
Oh. This is already so hard. I guess I'm just coming off to Passion of the Christ.
We'll take it.
Amazing. What are your thoughts on musicals?
You know, It takes one to get me, but, you know, there are some that have got me. Grease is the easier answer.
What's your favorite movie made before 1950?
My favorite movie made before 1950? Whoo, boy. I think, when was Breakfast at Tiffany made?
Doesn't count, but we'll take it. Go on.
We'll take it. What is your favorite quote from a film?
Oh, man. Favorite quote from a... Holiday Heart, Ving Rhames, You're Just a Microwave Bitch.
Nice!
What movie always makes you cry?
Oh, man, that's going to be Bicentennial Man when Robin Williams dies at the end.
Who's your favorite movie villain?
Oh, man, my favorite movie... it's Hack, but Eric Killmonger. I love a woke king.
Nice!
What's the first movie you remember seeing in a theater?
Titanic.
What movie do you rewatch the most?
That's Big Lebowski.
What's a movie that you always think of when you think of your mother?
It's going to be Monsters Ball because she made me close my eyes for the sex scene, and that's the longest I've had to close my eyes in my life.
Yay! Woo! Grilled it!
Yeah!
Oh!
Now it is time for staff picks. It could be any movie, in theater, streaming, what have you. Who would like to start?
Oh, I will. So this is not like... you know, breezy summertime viewing per se, but it's one of my favorite movies ever, and it is on Netflix, and it is Charlie Kaufman's Synecdoche, New York, featuring an incredible lead performance by the late Philip Seymour Hoffman. This is the first script of Kaufman's that he directed himself as a feature, and it is a mind scrambler. This movie has so much to say about how art works and how we try to work out our own life shit through our art, and even just about how we get to know character actors over the years and they integrate themselves into our lives as though we knew them, but we don't. It is an intellectual epic and a great, great movie, and I always see new stuff in it, and it was unfortunately not the giant hit that it should have been, but, you know, it's just... a movie that leaves me speechless. So if you've never seen Synecdoche, New York, Netflix is maybe not the ideal way to watch it, but it's there and you should see it, so watch it.
He doesn't do deep dives like that a lot. That's fun. Keeping us on our toes, Alonzo.
Yeah, I try.
I'll go next, okay, if that's cool. Mine is a motion picture that's out now. It's called Maiden. It's an incredible documentary. It's about this woman sailor in 1989, Tracy Edwards, decided she wanted to do the Whitbread Round the World race. So literally a sailing race circumnavigating the globe, and ended up, because of, it's packed full of casual sexism and actually professional sexism, and couldn't get crewed, put together her own all-female team. It was the first all-female team they ever had. They couldn't get sponsors because the sponsors presumed that at least one of them would die and it would be bad press. It's almost comical what they were facing in putting their team together, but it's also super inspiring because they kicked ass. And I was a sailor through the YMCA, and I was the sailing director of a camp for a couple of years. And I have a love of sailing forever, and there's something about it. It's a very powerful sport for rich people, to be fair. But find your way to the YMCA, you can turn that around. But watching all these women take this on and excel, and it's athletic and the endurance of doing something that long, it's pretty cool, and it's beautifully shot. It's like a stand in your seat and kind of cry and clap sort of movie. So
sailing and soccer, you're such a jock.
Oh my God, you guys, I'm such a jock. Spread the word.
Sporto.
For me, the movie that I'm obsessed with right now, and it's going to stay with me forever, it opens up in July 12th. It's called The Farewell by Lulu Wang.
It's so good.
It is so, so good. It's about this family who lives in New York. They have their grandma is in China, and she's dying, but she doesn't know that. They're keeping it from her, and so they all want to get, the whole family comes from Japan, and they're Chinese in Japan, from New York, they go to China under this false pretense of a wedding, we're all coming together for a wedding, we're going to celebrate the wedding, but they're all actually there to kind of say goodbye, their goodbyes. It's such a moving movie. And Awkwafina, who's known for comedy, just plays this serious, somber character and so well. It kind of hits home for me as an Asian American. It's like, oh my God, this is the culture. It's like a culture ties between Asian America and Asia. So it's such a moving movie, and it's so emotional just seeing the relationship between grandma in China and then you're here far away from her. So that's just, it's just you're prepared to cry. I don't care where you're from or what culture. It's just something, a story that hits close to family heart, your heart. Also, it's based on a lie.
Okay. Gotta love that.
Ooh, I love it. I'll go next, and since y'all are getting to know me, I'm gonna just go through Iffy's classics, and for you to check it out if you haven't. But one movie that I always keep on the mantle, which wasn't highly praised, but it's highly praised in my heart, which was Harlem Nights, which was a true black cinema classic. It had Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, anyone in that era who was popping in comedy, and I'm waiting for this next generation's Harlem Nights, because also it just was this black mobster kind of movie that just was the sky's the limit. It's ridiculous, and probably doesn't hold up well, but it'll be a fun watch. You'll know how the inside of my brain looks.
Didn't Eddie Murphy direct that movie?
I believe so, and that might have been what might have went wrong. I just can't see a stand-up comic just knowing when to kill the baby. Especially top of his game, Eddie Murphy. He was like, it's all great.
Yes, Eddie. Oh, absolutely.
So yeah, I can't do no wrong. Yeah, I'm Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's time for 5-star reviews. If you leave us a 5-star review, we'll read it on the air. And this first one is from Jay Christopher. I'll credit April Wolf with bringing me to this show, but everyone else here is also great. Always a diverse group with plenty of knowledge and good taste to go around. Oh, they haven't heard my episode yet. They've got their fingers all over the pulses of moviegoers. So that was Jay Christopher. Thank you for that 5-star review.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you to all of our hosts and guests today. Do y'all have any plugs that y'all want people to know about?
Well, OutFest is coming up here in Los Angeles, July 18th to the 28th. I am a senior programmer this year. We've got an amazing lineup. We're in theaters all over town. We're going to be based at the TCL Chinese, but we're also at the Orpheum and the Ace and the Ford and Plaza de la Raza and all these different amazing locations with some really extraordinary films. Go to outfest.org and get the full lineup and buy your tickets.
Yeah, and me, you can listen to me now every Friday right here. But if you're at Comic-Con, let me know. I'll be out there hanging out. I haven't decided whether or not I'm going to be lugging my various merch with things I say on them. But find me, and I might give you something for free. You'll at least get a hug. At least that much.
Well,
you
have a shirt that says Passion of the Christ.
Yes. It's favorite. His favorite movie.
It's going to haunt me forever. Laura, where can we find you online?
I'm always on Twitter, so I'm always, like, I'm on it right now. So you can find me at L Siricol. It's L-S-I-R-I-K-U-L. I'm always tweeting. I also tweet my work that I work on.
Ooh, so if you want to follow that work, you got to follow that Twitter. And me, Ify Wadiwe, IFYNWADIWE on Twitter and Instagram. And if D's on Twitch, if you like to watch people play video games, why don't you come watch me? if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast. Or send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. And one more time, the Who Shot line number is WSY-803-1664. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of MaximumFun.org.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.